Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for stage four of the Tour de France. 4th of July, public holiday. I was about to say weekend. 4th of July, public holiday in America. So ASO thought with the success of the Netflix series and trying to bring new fans into the sport, why not give Americans an exciting stage to tune into? From Dax to Nogaro, this will probably be the sleepiest stage of the Tour de France. Yeah, kind of curious, curious scheduling. Maybe they don't care. It's a flat sprint. There's one categorized climb, the Côte des Dames, which is, you wouldn't even know they're climbing on the parcours there in the big ring. 1 point for a Cat 4. And then this finish is what's actually interesting about this stage. Finishing on a moto circuit, we have a 700 meter straight. To me, it looks slightly uphill in parts, like false flat 1-2%. The entry at 2.7 Ks is very, very, or it narrows and then it widens and narrows and widens in points. There's a U-turn at 700. There's fast sweeping bends, headwind, cross headwind in the finish. There's not too much more to say about the parkour, Benji. And
well,
is there?
There's one vital thing in there. There is no real KOM point in the first 80% of the stage, which means that there's no breakaway incentive to really go for KOM points in there. And that had an influence today because, for example, yesterday and the day before, we saw Paulus getting in the breakaway to catch some points left and right because he wants to secure his KOM points. But today, there's nothing on the terrain. So we said yesterday, Paulus is not going to be in the break. But we're also in a situation where the Giro has these classifications, the Fuga classification for these pro teams to come into the race with wild cards and then go for these misclassifications that are not even shown on screen, that are just known behind the scenes for the real fanatics of cycling. And the Tour doesn't have that. So there's also no incentive to go in the break for the amount of kilometers. And I feel like we've seen a diminishment in the last few years in sponsorship breakaways.
Yeah, I guess because teams like Cofidis have trying to be more professional and say, hey, we're not just a team that's going to go in meme breakaways for TV exposure.
Yeah, they're
world tour. They are a world tour team. I mean, despite, you know, that was a fantastic win from Lefay and they have improved, but Cedric Vasseur was feeling himself. And we did mention it the other day. And listen, if I was him, I would say the same thing. I get it because it must be so rewarding to see Lefay beat the fuck out of Van Aert when all you've listened to the last 18 months is how Christophe Laporte's gotten so much better at Jumbo-Visma since he left Cofidis. I mean, he was already good on Cofidis. He's just, it's easy to win races when your main competitor lets you win, Gent Wevelgem, I would say.
For context, what did Vasseur say about Jumbo for the people that didn't see? It was more along the lines of, oh, Jumbo thinks they're one step forward on everybody due to the signs and so forth, or...
He is like, you know, they're not so smarter than everybody in the peloton. It's, you know, it's easy to be good and win races when you have a lot of money. Ineos might disagree, but I sort of, you know, it is tough. And Cofidis have improved. That being said,
they've still underperformed for many occasions and have terrible transfer policies in previous years.
They would have got relegated if they couldn't fund the local French circuit. And so who did get relegated? Israel didn't have that. But that aside. Well, that more goes to the whole attitude in the peloton, which, I mean, we've got not much else to talk about. There's many riders in this Tour de France who are not capable of winning a serious stage. And I mean a stage that is seriously contested. Like tomorrow, a good rider, a rider we see coming maybe top 10 in flesh, or...
Who does she like?
Yeah, or like a Ciccone. Like even I put someone who's the guy on Lotto Destiny.
Van Hills,
he might have crashed. So, but someone like that, I mean, I classify, I don't mean the top 1%. I mean, a good rider. But there's many riders at this Tour de France who cannot win those quote unquote serious stages. And in fact,
we got a name and shame, my friend. Come on, bring up a name.
Anthony Perez to go to Cofidis. Anthony Perez cannot win tomorrow. And I can't think of many stages he could win. Okay. That's not his job. He's a domestique and he's a valuable guy for Cofidis. But I'm thinking of Campo Imperatore in the Giro. And obviously that finishes on a climb, but Vacek is not winning any other stage in that Giro. And in fact, we've seen on a pure sprint stage, and it's a UAE Tour when there's been three sprints, but we saw a Vácek win that sprint stage in UAE when the peloton just got it wrong.
Like the Dowsett breakaway, for example, in the Giro. Yes. No offense to Dowsett and so forth, but that's a breakaway that is less contested, where the peloton just said, fuck it, break wins. And it's a breakaway of riders that aren't necessarily the ones you push forward as the breakaway competitors in a Giro.
Yeah, because if you're someone like Dowsett, you don't have a great sprint. You've got a decent engine. Mm-hmm. It's actually from a strong break to win, you need to either outclimb somebody or outsprint them, or just go away Van Baarle style if you've got a huge engine. So anyway, this is a long way of saying, I think a lot of teams vastly, first of all, biggest learning from yesterday is Alpecin has the best lead out.
Yeah.
Learning number one. So my theory would be, if I'm Trek, if I'm Israel, if I'm Intermarché, I need to make those guys more tired. I need them to be using Sinkeldam earlier. And so it's basically MVDP having to pilot Philipsen or Rickard piloting at 3Ks instead of 1500 meters. Because if you go head to head against Philipsen in a high speed sprint, if he gets a lead out and you're Pedersen, Strong, Binium, Christoph, even pick on those sort of riders, even Van Aert, frankly, but Jumbo aren't going to pace, you're not going to win. And I think these teams are vastly overestimating their win probability for their good, but not the best sprinter. And they're actually underestimating Philipsen. I don't think we're guilty of that. But to me, he gets a good lead out. The only people I can think of beating him is Jakobsen and Groenewegen, if they miraculously have been put into good position that day.
I agree with you. I think there's two aspects I want to talk about for a second that you alluded to. First of all, a team like Trek, for example, we saw Simmons do well on a similar finish in San Juan. Yes, there was a lot of wind and so forth. You mentioned it yesterday, but something spicy to try and do something different. For example, yesterday, what Asgreen did for a quick step, whether it was on purpose or not, he went off the front in a final sprint and Alpecin had to fix it. Those kind of things are situations where Alpecin has to put more pressure into it. And that's what probably led to Van der Poel launching at 550 meters instead of at 400 meters for Philipsen at the end of that sprint. But I do feel like Alpecin is less vulnerable to having their team weakened by their strategy in the sprints. They've got that Bohr-like strategy where they come up last minute with two riders in support of Philipsen. And we saw yesterday that they weren't in major numbers either, eh?
No.
They came up last minute with Rickard and Van der Poel. And as long as they have Rickard and Van der Poel left, I think they're fine. And the benefit that they have is the rest of their team, they can just put into rotation to chase on anybody they want because their team is so set on Philipsen.
Yeah, but I've seen Alpecin get it wrong before in managing breakaways. And that's actually, Alpecin are very good at the final lead out. And they really, if they don't have to, don't like being lent on to do the lion's share of the work for breakaway management. They'll put Dillier, they'll put a rider.
Yeah.
But only if Quickstep and others put one there. So I just think, but it's also a prisoner's dilemma. So I'm now a DS of Trek, or I'm a...
Congrats.
Yeah, congratulations to me. I need to get a pay rise. Just kidding. I'm a DS of Bahrain. I thought Bauhaus was very good yesterday. I think it's optimal that Fred Wright goes in that breakaway with six other Fred Wrights from the various teams who aren't Alpecin.
Yeah.
And we're going to make Alpecin fucking work all day. The problem is no one else is going to think like that. So I get Fred Wright to attack out of neutral. He goes on his own, and now we look completely stupid.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's this dilemma of, well, I think this way, no one else does. So you need some to talk to some people and be like, okay, Philip. I think it might happen now where they're like, actually, Philipson's pretty fucking good. But anyway, we'll get to the stage. What actually happened during this? I was running, Benji.
So
no first, break went.
We usually talk about the breakaway, but you just said it. There was no initial breakaway. And the reasoning before that, I just said earlier, there's no incentive for a breakaway to form that early. We went through that discussion. So we've got no breakaway, which also means that the tempo is so slow and the stage finishes so much later, which is really sad. But then again, I guess I had other things to do in the afternoon anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So we go through the stage. We've got an intermediate sprint now for full points. We get a lead out by Alpecin. Again, best lead out at the intermediate sprint. We see Rickard and Van der Poel and Philipsen. So they use their full lead out this time around for the intermediate sprint, which is something we haven't seen every single intermediate sprint so far, but the man's clearly after green, and he's clearly pretty fucking good at getting that green jersey at the moment, considering all the points he got today, because 20 at the intermediate sprint, and perhaps might have a good sprint at the end. he's going to have loads of points as a consequence. Now, I think that's basically it for the intermediate sprint. Philipsen takes full points there. Breakaway does happen a bit later, was De Laplace and Cosnefra, but that's not the only attack we had today. At some point during the race, we had the Belgian meme attack. It was back. Wout van Aert, Oliver Naas, and a bunch of other Belgians in the attack.
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
I didn't watch it. Don't care. But I mean, good on them. I mean, Oliver Naas picked that name out. Like, again, age of 2R.
What are you doing here?
Well, what sprinter do they have?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think also UNOX, frankly. I will get back to them later. I mean, UNOX is a wildcard team. B&B would have at least made this stage finish on time, I think. UNOX leveraging the whole team for Christoph to have... He's got no chance of winning the stage. No chance. And to top three, I also think very, very low chance. So, and also, Varenskog probably faster than Christoph, in my opinion, anyway. So... Maybe UNOX need to think, okay, we're a wildcard team. Is going in this breakaway beneath us? Because a lot of teams now think that. And listen, yeah, you will get caught probably most likely. But if you win, it's glorious. Yesterday was probably the day. I believe yesterday teams should have gone. Anyway, we go into, it was a lot more chill. We zoom to the final hour. It's a lot more chill than yesterday because there's wide roads. No one's half-wheeling each other anymore. Bora, Lotto Destiny, Jumbo, Alpecin, and some other teams take the front trek with Simmons before Simmons comes, and there's an agreement. Tranquilo. No one's half-wheeling. They're established.
Wow.
From 40 to 20, it was calm.
At some point, Simmons didn't get the memo.
Simmons then started half-wheeling people on the little rises, and you can see people looking like, come on, man, we've established position. Just chill out. Like, we don't need to get into this rush. But it was more calm than yesterday, that's for sure. But there were some decisive roundabouts. And so we saw, yeah, Kelderman leading out Jumbo. Ineos went there. UAE were chilling. They saved energy today, so they had a day off. Bora, I think, were very impressive, keeping Hindley safe once again, I must say. And let's get to the Welsford roundabout, Benji. You've got DSM, they've established right-hand side, long train, and there's a roundabout, and it's a left-hand turn, illegal, if you're on a car, because...
Thank you.
Yeah. Left-hand turn, the shortest way, so they just turn the first left at the roundabout, and then you could also go 270 degrees, and there's one rider who goes that way who gets switched off to the right. And I saw it. I saw the tattoos. It was our boy Welsford. And I was like, that's it. Done. Well, how many Ks was that? Like 6, 7 or something?
6, 7 kilometers from the finish line. Welsford straight into the Shadow Realm across the
150
across
positions.
The roundabout.
Gone.
He's way at the back of the pedal. You see the DSM guys after that corner like, oh God, we just lost someone. Oh God, it's our sprinter. And like we see the first two riders like looking behind. And then the third rider is on his microphone like, are you still alive? He was way at the back, so he was out. Anyway, we see a bit later a move by Bora to the front. And this was after that corner you just mentioned. And Bora really pushed forward at that moment. But we've already spoken about Bora a bit earlier, the way their strategy was with Van Poppel and Bennett. I feel like they didn't necessarily do that at UAE Tours and so forth, being straight at the front at this moment. They were.
Is that a Hindley effect?
Maybe. Because usually they're entirely at the back waiting... Yeah. To cross everybody in the final stretch. Here would be a bit sketchy to wait that long, but usually that's their strategy. I also feel like in the last few sprints, we saw Mayhew not necessarily holding the wheel of Van Poppel throughout the sprint itself, but that was the last I saw from Bora.
I know, and also when you look at the results with Van Poppel finishing ahead of Mayhew, either that was planned because it was a slightly grippy sprint in the end on the race circuit, or I don't know actually. But anyway... In the lead out, it gets super frantic and strung out into the 3 kilometers to go. But the 3 kilometers to go is just before the entry into the race circuit. So that, which is always a sprint point, coincides with already where everyone wants to be.
Does that have a consequence for the way Jumbo behaved? Because I feel like Jumbo went way further than the 3 kilometer mark into that narrow section onto the motorcycle course, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Moto course, moto racing circuit.
Circuit. Whatever it is. Is it the motorbikes? Well, this was... Jumbo, Van Hooydonk had been actually box deep. Wout van Aert, actually, he struggled with position the whole run-in.
Yeah.
He basically was a non-factor in this sprint. Laporte was in much better position. And yeah, Jumbo get to the front with Van Hooydonk, Benoit, Van Baarle. Van Hooydonk's the last man for them. And... yeah, they actually are in perfect position in terms of keeping Vingegaard safe, because you basically have him second wheel with one rider strung up in front of him through the 3Ks. And as you said, then Moritz comes on to extend the lead out because Bauhaus is in good position.
Yeah.
And Vingegaard with, like, I don't know, what, 2.5 to go?
Yeah.
Tacks onto Moritz wheel. And I'm like, bruh, please, come on. This isn't, we've seen this before. Do not plot. It's less than 3Ks to go. You don't, there's one man who's going to take big risks through these corners. But Vingegaard is like, white line fever a little bit. He's super, I know he was rubbing shoulders, but anyway, he was safe, didn't matter. I thought it was unnecessary because this is not like a normal sprint, because in a normal sprint, it is actually very dangerous. Mm-hmm. If you can hold second wheel in a single file and you can hold second wheel, do it for as long as possible in a normal sprint. But here, when you pull off, it's such a wide circuit, you can literally pull off and you're not going through the washing machine. Yeah. There's no one that's going to bang your bars when you see riders going backwards. So, I mean, eventually I think he did pull out or got swamped. But no, when he did actually get swamped, he had to go through the group.
And this was, he moved back after we had a crash in the group already, because Jakobsen crashed. I don't know the specifics of...
With Guarnieri, I think.
Yeah, Guarnieri and Jakobsen both crashed. I don't know the specifics of how they crashed, but 1.6 kilometers, Jakobsen out of the picture. Well, Alaphilippe was in third position, which was very intriguing to see.
Yeah.
And then Alaphilippe disappeared, Jonas disappeared, and we went with the real sprinters or the sprinter teams of the second row.
I still feel like the front. Yeah, exactly. I feel like there wasn't that much control. There wasn't like
Alpecin was in the shadow realm at that point.
Exactly. Like, they'd lost each other. Van der Poel was further in the group than Philipsen. You saw Laporte in fourth wheel, and I really thought, is he going to try a finesse or attack? Because there's no Ryan Mullen coming up at 1.2, or Asgreen at 1.2, 1.3, or Ballerini, or even Rickard, frankly, to really lock this down and increase the speed. It was Cofidis hoping to maintain front position and Uno X just behind them. And Laporte was kind of surfing fourth wheel. Now, I don't know if he was waiting for Van Aert, or whether he, because at that point, Laporte should have been going for his own race. Van Aert was so deep. Now, obviously, you're not exactly talking to each other on the radio with a K left, but I feel like Laporte had an opportunity there, didn't go for it. And we see everyone lined up. We get into the finishing straight, 700 meters to go, and Cofidis on the front, and then Van der Poel finds space. He's got Philipsen finally on his wheel. Cavendish is in okay position, Groenewegen okay, and Van der Poel moves Binnie out of the way, who is to his left, and basically does a monster lead out up the slope. Everyone tries to, Ewan is the best rider to get onto Philipsen's wheel. Some guys tried to get on Philipsen's wheel, but the speed differential was so high, they literally just went past them, like Groenewegen and others, and Laporte, who didn't even contest. And Philipsen, yeah, he's going up the drag. Ewan in his wheel, Ewan comes out of his wheel. I'm thinking, ooh, Caleb Ewan, if peak Ewan. But Philipsen wins.
Hey, have you not learned about Caleb Ewan this year? Caleb Ewan always loses sprints by a very small margin.
Yeah. But I think Ewan's level is good.
Yeah.
And I think Philipsen is just that good that he's now beating guys in his draft. So yeah, perfect lead up from Van der Poel for Philipsen. Philipsen wins again. It's not surprising, to be honest. They were the best yesterday and Philipsen's the fastest. And when you have the best lead out and the fastest sprinter, you're probably going to win multiple stages.
I think one of the other reasons is also that Van der Poel's lead out was later than yesterday. 550 meters, lost the last sprint stage. Now 420, 425, if I recall, at the right top at that moment. So it's later. So that means that if we look back at the tape, Philipsen probably had a shorter sprint than the 11, 12 seconds I think I counted yesterday. I think today it was probably shorter than that. So that's also a benefit, because then you can have your acceleration and you're not in the wind as long as, for example, yesterday. So that's the thing there. But lots of shit is happening while Philipsen is there, because we didn't just have the Jakobsen crash. We had 2-3 crashes after that. And one of the crashes...
As they went around to the finishing straight?
Yeah, an Astana rider, probably Case Bol, who returned from the work of Cavendish or of trying to position Cavendish at least for the sprint. He was probably crashing because the bike flew in the air. So I'm going to guess he was on the floor as well. Otherwise, pretty weird. But not the only crash. We saw Weidenschult, who did the lead out for Uno X, who had a solid position in the last stretch. Well, he kind of does the thing that Remco did in his Giro crash. He was looking to the left.
He moved even further, I think.
Yeah, well, he did the same behavior I mean.
Same thing, yeah.
He looks to the left and moves to the right without being aware of what's coming on the right side. And on the right side, we've got Cofidis riders yodeling about. So Alex Axel Zangler. Yeah. I was going to say Alex.
He's not unnamed. Do not erase this man who just... I mean, this is, by the way, a word on Adam Hansen. I mean, has he lost access to his Twitter account since it's an ASO race? What's the meme of the dog, you know, the Billy Strong dog? It's like transition stage, a stage 10 Tuesday transition stage. It's a bit rainy in the Giro. Adam Hansen's like strong dog. And then ASO with a dangerous parkour. He hasn't heard from him. Maybe Safar will say something. But this is some of the things where we do talk about parkour. Yesterday, not a fan of it. A lot of problems, I think, why there's a bend, already discussed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But also, it is also true, two things can be true at the same time, that riders do dangerous things all the time. And this one is one where it's like Tour de France sprint, week one, easy stage. If you're going to be up there doing a lead out or participating, you should know better than looking over your shoulder and drifting like an amateur,
at 60
frankly.
60K an hour.
Like an amateur. And to crash a guy out into the barriers like the UNOX guy did. Now, both of them crashed. I'm sure the UNOX guy, Varnschkold, I think, he also doesn't want to crash. But how do...
It's a mistake.
It's a mistake, and it's something he shouldn't be doing, and it's dangerous. And in sprints, you shouldn't be looking over and drifting after your lead out. Like, it's a basic principle. So... whether you, I mean, crashing is a penalty in itself. He didn't want to crash.
Yeah, but crashing is a penalty in itself. But yeah, the other guy's also crashing. But it's like, it's an unfortunate mistake that...
Should you be disqualified or sanctioned for that? Because it's not intentional, but it's dangerous behavior which has crashed another competitor and it could have been avoided.
It's difficult because, for example, we look at RVV that crashed by the Bahrain rider, for example, that caused a massive crash there. We were shouting, okay, that should be penalized.
And he got DQ'd.
In this situation, what's going to happen? He's going to get relegated and he's going to be moved to the last of the group, has no influence on the race at all. So I don't think that the UCI rules are built to be able to do anything to him. And the same way that they're not built to do anything to Vanderpool's little bump to Binium, for example. Let's say that's harder bump.
I think Binium didn't want that smoke.
He probably didn't want to fight Vanderpool for that position, but Vanderpool just also moved him out of the way, the same way Groenewegen moved Kovacar out of the way.
Yeah.
It's maybe a bit less, but it was still the same move. Now,
or Schelmoser got relegated. Yeah, that bizarre. Are we relegating sprinters? GC guys sprinting for fifth now? No, because that's an easy win, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Schelmoser gets relegated. Well, he didn't have bonies. To relegate someone who wins a stage... or you need cojones. And you were about to say, you relegate the lead out, so what?
Yeah, exactly. If you relegate, let's say you relegate Vanderpool for pushing someone out of the way. Yeah, let's say he full crashes Binny. Binny's in the barriers. Binny's upside down on the corner there. If you relegate Vanderpool, Philipsen still wins the stage.
Yeah.
So UCI rules behave like it's an individual sport a lot of the time. While it's a team sport, and we saw this a while ago, I think 2 years ago, for example, where Consonni was purposely pushing someone to the side for Viviani to win a sprint in some French 1.1 race, and Consonni got relegated.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
But Viviani got the victory, and like, this is we're over discussing this because Vanderpool, it was on the edge, but I'm not sure it's relegatable.
Yeah, Binny didn't force the issue too much. Yeah. He just sort of cleared the space. But anyway,
and it happens a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it does. But Ben, when you look at Schelmoser's move, I'm like, is this really that different to what Schelmoser did?
Yeah.
To me, not really. Philipsen wins ahead of Ewan. Bauhaus, another good result. Podium result in third. That's also 110 UCI points and 150 in back-to-back day. So 260 from Bauhaus. There's a lot of extra value from sprinters who can get consistent results in this Tour de France. It's a big change from the UCI rules last year. And also Lotto Destiny with Ewan will be, I think, okay, they want to win, I know, but they also need UCI points, 150 points today, they'll be happy. And he looks good enough to, if Philipsen makes a major mistake, he can win a stage. Cockhart fourth, Cavendish fifth, so back-to-back sixth and fifth. That's actually better than I expected, because in the Giro, they were a complete mess against a significantly worse sprint field.
Yeah, today he was in a good position though, but like you said, if Vanderpool flies past it with Philipsen in the wheel, he can't compete with that. He's going to get gabbed because you need such an acceleration to get back to that wheel, to be in that draft of that speed that is passing you, that it's pretty much impossible to do it from there onwards. It's interesting that Mezget's got a better result than Groenewegen.
Same with Van Poppel ahead of Mayer. So I don't know whether the little rise, whether it was a little bit grippier than people expected. There was definitely positioning issues. There's two lead out trains. No, I'm going to change. There's 1.5 lead out trains in this race. Alps and De Koenig is one. They have a lead out train, and Quickstep are half.
I think Bahrain is also halved it today. They kept with Fred Wright. They're actually keeping Bahrain at the front quite well in the last 5 kilometers.
Yeah, and Moritz was pretty good as well. It was very messy. I feel like there was a lot of big lack of control.
Maybe like 25%.
Yeah. 25%. We're nearly at two. Christoph, 7th. Mezges, 8th. Van Aert, 9th. Didn't really contest. Never in a position to. Pedersen, 10th. Just as well, they didn't let Quinn Simmons have a go on the 4th of July. Strong, 11th. And Mozzardo, 12th. Sagan, 13th. Yeah, Groenewegen, Mayus, 14, 15. So I still think Bennett would have got better results in the sprints than Mayus this Tour de France. Maybe he wouldn't have won one, but I think he's a better pure bunch sprinter than Mayus. That's my opinion. And I think they made a mistake. But anyway, that's enough from this stage. Tomorrow's stage, we have maybe GC action. It's certainly not going to be a sprint from Poe, which you don't think it's going to be you don't think Groenewegen makes the finish?
I don't think Groenewegen makes the finish, my friend. I think it's
Luke will. Luke will say Arvid Decline makes it, no problem.
Luke's getting roasted every podcast, but he can't say anything.
Well, he'll say it himself.
But when it comes to the stage, we know what it looks like. Hey, pull out a 2020, Hirschi was in the breakaway that stage, and we saw the GC action behind where Pogacar and Roglic were fighting for the bonus seconds on the Muddy Blanc climb. I'll let you go to the parkour closely for a second here.
Well, yeah, Poe, I think, has a pretty influential mare, so he gets like a Tour de France start or finish every single year. It is the gateway to the Pyrenees on the French side. Anyway, the first 70Ks or so are basically flat. There is a 2K 6% climb in the first 13Ks. I dare say the break might form on that, or at least people that have missed it and are strong will try jump there. Intermediate sprint. So that'll be interesting. This is the first interesting one where Philipsen will really see his level. He needs to jump in the breakaway here to go for that intermediate sprint because Pedersen will be jumping.
And will he need to? As in, he's already got 80 points on any other sprinter.
Yeah, he will. This early, you have to. I think it's going to be a big, strong break. And I mean, maybe last year, often the break almost didn't go at all. But
yeah.
I think the break will go because Jumbo, UAE are the team to me that I should go for the intermediate sprint at 50Ks. Col du Soudet, which is actually quite long. It's an all-category climb. So if you're KOM, you can erase, I'm pretty sure you can erase all of Paulus' points on that first climb because it's 15.2K, 7%, like 20 points. Descent, then the Col de Cher, 4.2K, 6.2%, a Cat 1. Cat 3, sorry. Short descent. And then the Col de Marie Blanc, up to 1,000 meters, not high altitude at all here. 7.8Ks, 8.4%, but the last 5Ks are 10.5%. Very difficult. Bonification at the top, 8.52, like at the top of Hayes Cabal the other day. And then it's 11-kilometer descent, but actually the first 4Ks of it are not really a descent. You need some horsepower. It's actually a false flat, false summit. And then the last 8Ks are false flat uphill. That's where Hirschi actually got caught last year, but in 2020 by the group of Bernal, Landa, Roglic, and Pogacar. And yeah, where Pogacar took his first Tour de France stage win ahead of Hirschi and Roglic. This, I think this could be quite an interesting stage, Benji. I think it's our first breakaway stage because I think I don't believe UAE. I think they'll try. I think UAE will go do the same thing as on stage two. Why wouldn't they go more? If they thought on stage two, it was worthwhile to chase all day for bonification and maybe Pogacar winning the stage, he's more likely to win this stage. So I think UAE will try and control, but I think the hour and a half, hour and 40 before Col du Soudet is too much for them. And they will not be able to control the break and it'll be some big boys in there. So I think break wins, and I can't remember who I said, but what do you think about this stage before we pick who we want to, who we think we will win?
If you're a UAE, your goal is to have a smaller ruler breakaway at the start of the stage that you can control and hoping that you can have the gap expand to an unbridgeable gap on the Col du Soudet so that climbers can't join that. Now, that's a very specific job to do. They've got some rulers, but they don't have the crazy amount of rulers either. Trentin can try and do that job, Alain can try and do that job. Manage the breakaway in that sense, because that's what they should aim for. And if you're Jumbo, isn't your goal to make it harder for UAE then by putting someone in the breakaway, satellite rider in the breakaway, for example? But because let's say Muddy Blanc happens, might as well have someone in the breakaway like Van Aert and so forth. If you put Van Aert in the breakaway on this stage, And we get to Marie Blanc at the top, and the breakaway is still ahead. Van Aert can wait on top of this climb, or not wait, depending on what his desires are at that point in the race.
Hasn't won a stage yet.
But if he waits, he can also try and outsprint Wout Pogacar to finish to take bonus seconds away if the bonus seconds are still there.
True, yeah.
Or it's kind of a mechanic of that sense. Depends on how many people are ahead, whether the break is far ahead and so forth. Paulus will be in the breakaway. He's going to want points. And what stops Paulus from winning the stage?
That will cost him. Because you have to. He will be sprinting on Sude. And it depends on the size of the break.
You mentioned Ciccone, but Ciccone's on 40 seconds
in
GC.
So it's really this. You see it all the time. Like, Ciccone, why are you here? No, like, they said he's not going for GC.
Yeah.
This is such a good stage for Ciccone. Like, he could kill 99% of riders in this breakaway. Now, maybe he has decided, I feel good, I will go for GC. But if you look at, I think Jayco will be in the break 100%. Craddock will be in the break. I bet you, and Yul Jensen, I think Harper actually is their best chance to win from the break, but he probably will be on Simon Yates duties. And you look at Lefebvre, Benji, again, he's on 12 seconds. Now, I think UAE won't be able to control the breakaway formation that well, but I really don't think they'll be letting guys, their preference will not be to let Ciccone, Lefebvre, guys super close on GC into the breakaway. So I think that's a mistake. If you want to go for the stage, I think you should, be on more time. Like, Haig's on 4:20. Why not be on 10?
Yep.
If you want to win from the break.
I fully agree. There's also teams that don't have that GC riders anymore. For example, EF, they've lost Carapaz. Their entire team is behind on 6, 14, 14, 24, and so forth minutes. Betiol, Paulus. Paulus is the guy.
Betiol will be in the break.
Betiol gets in the break. Heiskebel, he was pretty damn good. Yeah. He got over that. He was in that group. So that seems to be a stage where Betiol can do something. But Betiol is so inconsistent that I can never guess when he's going to be in that breakaway. But a good Betiol can do this shit. Courts, I'm not so certain. I think this is too hard. Now, a Chavez, for example, could be in that breakaway, but I've got a feeling that Betiol and Paulus might be a better combination. Tug Buddy plus half, well, very first up.
Chavez not getting in the break on a flat start.
Yeah, exactly. And if he does, Jungels will be in there and then put him on the side like he did 4 years ago, whatever that was.
Was that a Gita?
Oh, was it a Gita?
Yeah.
Fuck.
It's the kid. I think Jungels should be in this breakaway with Patrick Conrad. Always goes for a break like this. So Bora also like to go for the breakaways. I don't know how Maxim Van Hills feels. He's someone you would also put down for Lotto Destiny if he's okay. Matteo Jorgensen's now on 21 minutes. If he's in any sort of shape, he must be in the breakaway. This is a perfect stage for him to win. So I think there's so many riders, so many, and strong ones that I've just read out. Like, these are strong riders. Well, speaking of Israel,
he's closing GC, no?
He's exactly. Like, Dylan Turns is on 43 seconds, so he can't get in the break. So maybe it'll be Schultz and Uhl from them. They like to get two in the break. But I think this is going to be a breakaway of over 10 riders, I think the break goes all the way.
I think we fucked up not mentioning Alexei Lutsenko. Well, he also had a bike issue at some point last 2 days, but he looked bad. But then again, he's that guy that loses time on purpose and then arrives on the fifth or sixth stage of a Grand Tour to take a breakaway stage, though.
You know who's another rider who could have done well here, but now he's too close. But maybe he's let in anyway because no one knows who he is. You know, Harald Tejada's just quietly only on 1 minute 40.
Why is he there?
Yeah. But like, he was climbing well in Swiss. He was randomly in groups of seven in like G2. So
Madouas, Johannessen?
Mate, FDJ letting a rider in the breakaway.
Well, they said they would.
I'm the fuck on.
Alaphilippe needs to be in the breakaway.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why is he
but
here?
Don't you think this is why all these riders will... So I think break goes all the way. GC, what do you think happens?
We've got action.
Yeah?
Like, the bonus seconds on top won't necessarily matter, but there's going to be action on Marie Blanc. Sorry, but...
I think Adam Yates is gone.
If... Gone out of the GC.
I think UAE...
You twisted your entire
table. No. UAE agree with me that he is too good. And because of that, I'm flipping it on you. Pogacar's so scared of Adam Yates that they're going to make him lose time tomorrow by doing a lead out. It's like on Heiskebel.
Yeah. I truly believe you.
It's not because Pog's better.
If UAE is... trying to gain time on the first two stages, yes, bonus seconds are involved, but are trying to do stuff there, then they're going to try and do shit on this stage anyway. Yeah. So I believe UAE is going to Gonna go full offensive again on that climb. And I'm intrigued because Marie Blanc is not the same as Heiskebel. It's not the same as Col de Piquet. It's harder. It's deeper. It's that fake news climb that... Was it the first fake news climb we covered?
Yeah, maybe, because the tour that year was before the Giro and the Vuelta.
Yeah.
So it might have been.
Why is it a fake news climb?
Because, yeah, the first 3-4 Ks are basically 3-4%. And then the last, it's really steep. And in 2020, Poggi basically slapped it from the base.
Yeah.
From memory. He went really hard from the base, and then Roglic nearly chopped him in the sprints at the top. Bernal was quite strong there. I think we're going to have a group of Simon Yates, Tadej Pogacar, and Jonas Vingegaard over the top, and maybe Hindley. And whether they work together very much depends on whether the stage is still on offer, who's behind.
Yeah,
I think they will work like 2020. I think they'll work, even if the stage is gone.
Because
why wouldn't Jonas work if Pogacar's willing to pull and Adam Yates is behind?
Bonus seconds are gone anyway, so yeah, it's not like Pogacar can gain time on you unless he attacks away from
you. Just pull, right?
Yep,
so,
agreed.
So I think there's a good chance that they only took 9-11 seconds on Group 2 in 2020. It shouldn't be a huge gap either.
I swear that in 2020, the breakaway formation lasted until the top of Sudet.
Yeah, Hishi was mad strong. Like, he went solo with like 70 Ks to go, I think.
Yeah.
And he was in, I remember he was on the S5 because they were still on them. And he did before it was illegal, the
puppy
pause the whole time. He's still that good. They just don't give him the chances. maybe not.
This man's cooking today.
Yeah, I'm cooking. Nah, Hishi, he won Tour of Hungary GC. What more could you want? It's a bit different to holding off a Tour de France GC belt.
Where's Lafayette GC?
He's on 12 seconds.
He should have lost Amford, is there? I said it 2 days
ago. Can
he not
win from the GC group?
Oh,
do you think he'll drop? I think he'll drop. This is too hard.
If
you're gapped on the Heiskebel, I'm sorry, the Heiskebel is 3.7K, 7%, and he was gapped, and he had to come back. He's going to get proper gapped on this.
Sir, Victor Lafayette is the new resurrection of Andy Schleck, my friend.
No. Schleck never had that punch.
No, he never did. You're right.
I think this is on the limit for him, yeah, but it depends how if there's a group of 10.
Yeah, but
Poggi's too attacking. So
he should have lost time for the breakaway, 100%.
I agree. And if he wasn't the breakaway, good luck beating him on this sort of climb.
Yeah, he would heely the shit out of this parkour.
Yeah, he'd dance away from everybody on Marie Blanc, but it's too late to lose time now. Anyway, I think it'll be an interesting stage. Break formation will be interesting to watch. And even, I think, Col de Soudet, UAE, if they want the stage, they're going to have to pull Col de Soudet very hard because they do the descents very slowly. So who did I pick?
I had no fucking clue.
You pick then.
I pick? I don't know who I picked. I just named 17 riders and hoped that I would get away with it. I think for this specific stage, I'm going to go with, what was the name I picked? I also forgot. People will just say in the comments which name we said first.
I'm going with Jorgensen. I think he's been saving energy, and this is going to be a big target for him. So, Jorgensen, in honor of 4th of July, the day before, will go in the break and win his first Tour de France stage.
Okay. I believe you. I believe that you believe that. I'm going to go for Nelson Paulus, takes KOM, takes the stage, boom.
Damn, must be in good shape then. I mean, he is in good shape, but we'll see. We'll see. He's not competing with De La Place in the breakaway or whoever it was.
What can we expect from a leg like Louvel? Because
No.
I mean, like, in the grand scheme of things, what kind of rider is that? Because I swear he was on the same page as Vauquelin initially, and then Vauquelin just went interstellar.
Louvel's like a classics guy.
Where is Vauquelin?
He is going to the Vuelta, I believe.
Sad.
I hope they. I mean, yeah. Arkea are anonymous here. They've not brought their best rider, which is
stupid.
Which is Vauquelin, even though he's 22. So, yeah.
Vauquelin would have been side by side with Lafay.
He would have been up there. He wouldn't have lost much time by now. So yeah, I agree. Like I would have loved to see him here. But he's going to do the Vuelta anyway. That's our picks for tomorrow. Hopefully it's a good stage, like in 2020 it was very good, and we'll see. And maybe we'll actually see some proper GC gaps as well tomorrow. Maybe not a minute, but there'll be something on the road, I think, at least. But until I recap the stage tomorrow, ciao.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.